There we go. A little bit of technical difficulties never fails. We did it. Mando is doing the audio today. Hopefully it's working on some pieces, but this is Rec Radio episode 41. We got Ansem here. We'll bring him in a couple minutes. First, let's talk about our sponsor, OSF. Go ahead.
Hey guys, as you know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, one of the largest crypto casinos out there. You can do everything from sports gambling, casino games, NFT trading, borrowing, lending, crypto futures trading as well. So check out rollbit.com or rollbot.com, depending on your jurisdiction. As usual, we have two codes to give away. The first code is episode 4141. Episode 4141. And I'll put that on the that code on the YouTube stream as well. If you want to watch the show live on YouTube, check out the link that is pinned to the top of the space.
Getting some budget codes, aren't we?
What happened?
Getting some budget codes these days.
Yeah, episode no, I mean, that was a creative one.
Run out of ideas. Episode 41.
Rollbit's got the DGen exchange thing going too. I mean, that's some shit coins. I'm sure Ansem can touch on those when he comes in. But let's go over what's been happening. I don't know. I mean, we're in the midst of a FrenTech boom, so it is kind of fitting that we have Ansem on because he's one of the top guys on there. So let's not touch on that, I guess, yet. What else is going on? I mean, the market's sitting here, the top of the range, I guess, of recent memory.
I really have enjoyed being part of your FrenTech group, actually, because I don't think anyone in the chat kind of knows if you're really changing your mind or it's like a half joke that you change your mind or if you stop
yeah,
out.
Yeah, no, they're getting a look into the actual insanity that I can't like post on Twitter. A lot of
football. Am I in your group? Do I own a key?
I don't think so. I don't think you're a real
shit.
Friend.
Oh, yeah, you've got to be in there. It's yeah. Like business.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, I've got to get KPI.
I'm on the leaderboard now. I'm pretty expensive. I mean, we're not going to talk about the price. I don't want any securities laws coming at me. Like the stoner cats. I think it's different, though. I read that case.
I hope it's different.
The Frentex is issuing the shares. We're not issuing the keys. Sorry. And
the shares.
Just because not implying that any price goes up and they're not giving anything.
What about if somebody buys like 20 of their own?
But you're not issuing it, you know, like the thing is issued. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. I mean that, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I didn't talk to a lawyer. I'm just,
we're not coming off the Gainsy just yet then.
Yeah, no, they probably should be, but, he has a fraudulent bid on his, he has 37 of his own, but, yeah, that can only last so
37
long.
37 of his own.
Thing yeah, is, you don't want to get too high. Cause if you get too high, then you have fewer traders, right?
There. I'm at 1.4. Why don't we just bring Ansem in now?
Somebody has a low FrenTech price, if I'm honest.
No, I'm at the sweet spot, man. Like 0.42 is where you want to be. Then people can actually afford to like buy and sell you. When it gets too high, it's like liquidity, like volume freezes.
Yeah, right. Is Ansem on video? Can you bring him in, Sims?
Let's bring him in.
Yo.
How we doing?
What's popping?
Yeah, what's up?
I don't know if you heard, but we were talking some FrenTech Yeah, just starting off that convo right now, just because we decided to bring you in.
Since cool.
You're on top of the leaderboard. You're up there. We don't want to talk about prices or anything, but
I feel like that's
solid. I don't know.
That's the first thing that people are going to ask. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the first thing people are going to ask from now on. Just like, oh, what's your FrenTech price? And if it's low, you just think like they're filled.
A little Black Mirror-esque.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, dude, it's kind of wild. I think people really haven't gotten over the hump of like attaching a price to a person. I think that's why people are kind of hesitant, like, oh, I don't want to buy a racer key for 5 ETH or whatever it was. But Bored Apes are still right now sitting at like 27, I want to say, like 27 ETH. So the way I think about it is kind of like NFTs, but with access to whoever chat you're in. That has value, I think, like outside of just crypto people, but just generally across the board. But TVL's up like 6x in the past 2 weeks, like 30 mil now.
It feels really sticky. I mean, people are using it. People are addicted to it. I mean, I'm having fun with it. I mean, it's kind of like that Ox Lauliot post that was there. It combines everything crypto's notorious for. Yield farm, degree, Bondi token and curve structure, paid groups, insider info. I don't know anything about that one, but monetize your ego and pride and cult communities. You still aren't bullish. Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. And it feels like the illiquidity behind these things, like the prices could get kind of wacky. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of think you just take racers as a, you know.
We had this conversation today. Like, where do you think a racer gets to?
Yeah, what will be the top tick for racer?
I've read that it takes like, I mean, everyone's bonding curve is a little different. because of like how it was launched, if you got bought it or not. But it doesn't take like 500 people to buy for it to get to 20s. Ansem, do you know anything about this?
I can pull it up. I don't think it's that many though. I think it's less than 500 to get to 20s. The guy, Cygar Dev, did like a thread on it. But I mean, like a couple weeks ago, I was like, Racer will get to 10, and he's already at 8.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think 100 mil TVL is kind of where I'm thinking it could get to, like at some peak in this airdrop phase. And in that case, Racer would be probably closer to like 20 ETH, I think. So that's where I'd
kind of my ceiling now. On him, too. Or the yeah. top ones would be like 20.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I think when it gets that level as well, probably going to be kind of stable in terms of number of users. But we were talking about that's probably pretty valuable. Like being in a room with some of these, once it gets to that sort of level, it'll probably stay a bit more stable. Like people, the conversation will improve even more. It'll be like being part of like that group chat that you always wanted to be part of, or like,
in yeah, a bull it really market. Is. Like, I mean, you're getting the direct access to some people who would never respond to your DM, essentially,
or right?
Like that. So there's definitely a lot of value in here, especially if the users and the curators of the group continue to stay, which just seems like a lot of people. A lot of people are active right now. Everyone in my thing, the only person I had to liquidate was Farouk. I feel bad. I gave him a liquidation notice. He didn't respond, but then I heard he doubled in price. I guess I have to buy him back because he started.
You also liquidated OSF though, right?
I did liquidate OSF. That was because I kind of gave up on the app. I thought it was like a boom and bust type thing. It like boomed for a second, like everyone was topped out at 2, and I kind of gave up on it. But then they fixed some features. They made it cleaner. They made it the UI just feel better. And now I'm like in there. Like I'm on there more than Twitter personally. Like, I mean, I like it more than Twitter too. It's a personalized combo. You just respond to everyone. And I don't know. It's very interesting. Interesting stuff going on in that app right now.
Well, no one really knows
on Frentech.
Yeah, there's no trolls, right?
There's no trolls on Frentech.
Nobody knows.
They could buy your shares and fuck with you all day by posting stuff that only you could see, though. So it's like, it doesn't
matter. That would be the ultimate trolling. Hey, I've just paid 3 ETH
to get
into your room so I could
I heard someone talking about direct access
to troll you.
Literally.
That's dedication. That's dedication.
Like, all right.
I'd respect that. I'd be like, fair enough, man. Like, you put in the work. Like, troll me.
You should definitely get doing that. That's for sure.
That's new level. I mean, people were talking about it, comparing it to like the Stoner Cats regulatory thing. I already gave my take on that. That you're not issuing anything. That the app is, and the app doesn't imply that it'll go on anything like that. I think it's clear. I don't know. I mean, is Racer in the U.S. or is he escaping to Dubai?
I'm pretty sure he's in the U.S.
Get out.
But yeah. I mean. So there's that. I don't know. What else we got to talk about?
I think it's going to be around in the next 12 months. Like it's clearly a Ponzi, but like it's a Ponzi which actually is backed by some real like value. Like people want to be in the room. Yeah. It's not just like a meme coin where everyone's just like, oh, the vibes. It's like,
yeah.
I've been in these rooms and you're right. Like, the quality of the conversation is better. The tone of the conversation isn't just like a PvP. It's not simp. But it's like, there are good conversations, right? Like, I would go into a group chat and people aren't just like randomly fighting or like, which is what, it's a perfect time for it to come out because CT was at like an all-time low in terms of feeling, I think, like going into this being released. No one was enjoying it. And now it feels like it can last.
It's very high signal to noise ratio is how I talk about it because everybody's has very strong incentives right now to share alpha because if they know they're sharing quality information, their key price is going to go up and then they're going to get more points for this airdrop. So everybody's kind of like sharing the best information that they can. All the rooms that I go into, it's like a ton of quality info being put out. And especially the smaller accounts, which I thought was interesting, the ones who are like under sub 1K followers and they don't really have that outreach. But if they share good information in their rooms, it only takes like 100 people to move their key price because of how the bonding curve works. So if they're active on Frentech, sharing their strategies, sharing their research, sharing trades, and they're consistently doing well, that's a way for smaller accounts to blow up. And I've like been on active on Twitter doing that, finding smaller accounts that I think do well. So in Frentech, it's like, it's a way to bet on those people. It's interesting.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that too. Like these lower follower accounts, when I click on the friend text like a half ETH, and I click the account, and it's like 2,000 followers. I'm like, oh shit, what the hell happened here? Yeah. So it's like a new thing that people could be early to, rather than, you know.
But is that I sometimes I look through like the top 100, I'm just like, I have no idea what this is. Is there like some games?
So some of those top 100 people are given, they're sharing their airdrop with their followers, so that's like farming a lot of, you know, action to their share or keys, I should say.
Yeah.
Or they're incentivizing people to buy. I mean, whether or not that's a good idea for regulations, I don't know. But I mean, it doesn't really. Yeah.
Why might be about regulations so much? Like,
yeah, you're right. I don't know. I'm not a Fed. I'm out. No more regulations. But yeah, there's that.
There's that, but I know there's like the 3-3 stuff, but is there something else going on? Like,
what's the meta? Like, I mean, like, yeah.
I've seen people like botting their own accounts so they can get up a leaderboard and then.
The way I've seen it, the points system has changed slightly over the first few weeks, and they're very transparent with saying that they have reserved the right to change it. So if they think somebody's gaming it in one way that's not equitable for like everybody using the app, they'll change whatever scoring system that they have. But currently the 3-3 thing, the reason that's so popular is because the past 2 weeks we've seen they're incentivizing hold time. So people who are just in and out of shares, in and out of keys, in and out of keys back and forth, didn't get as many points as the people who were holding keys from the very first week. So this 3-3 thing is like, oh, I'll buy your key, you buy my key, and we're going to hold it till the airdrop, and we're both going to get more points. So it's like beneficial for everybody. So that's why the 3-3 thing is popping off, because hold time is one of the factors. But I also think like retention is something they're tracking. So if you log in every day and you're sending messages, I think that's probably a big thing too. And sharing information like pretty actively, I think that's something that they want to reward. So I would imagine that's also a big factor in how many points you get.
Yeah.
When you think this airdrop is?
Like, they said 6 months.
The airdrop parrot is undefeated. That is,
it's
the strongest thing in crypto.
That is right. Just keep playing for your free money. It'll come someday.
Yeah. Like Blur in the NFT space. I mean, that. Season one, season two, season three, like it's gone on for a long time. Like I think they'll, even if they do their first airdrop, that'll be season one's airdrop, and then we'll all be waiting for season two and season three, right? Like they're not dumb. I think there's ways that they can draw out this one for a long time.
Yeah.
Everyone made money on season one Blur airdrop, and then people who didn't participate started chasing it in season two, and they're still waiting. So I think like the move is, if they follow that same paradigm playbook, I think the move is you want to get the first airdrop when everyone's like, oh shit, now I've got to farm this. And then you just like, you know, move on to something else.
My finger's on the trigger to nuke all of you guys. Anything.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Only on my head.
I got guys writing bots right now. Well, we're good.
Everyone else.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Blasted 2, do you see what Matchy's doing tonight? Did you see this stuff?
What? No, I don't even know that.
He's put that vote to the DAO today, to like buy back 1,000 apes with the ape coin from the DAO. And he's like,
the huge position. What's the point of that? That's just another band-aid that does nothing. Congrats, Maki.
Well, he owns them.
Oh, he owns them too, and he wants them to buy.
He's getting the DAO to buy out his bags, essentially.
That seems like it should be blocked. That's like an activist investor, but like,
but he owns a ton of the ape coin as well.
It sounds like he dug himself a huge hole here.
Yeah, well, that I only mentioned it because of Blur season two. Like, he obviously went big during then, but maybe we'll see that too. Maybe we'll see that in Friend Tech.
Yeah,
we got to get Machi on Friend Tech. I don't think he's on yet.
Yeah, no.
He's not.
I don't think he likes me, or I don't know if he likes Mando or OSF, so he's not gonna be on this show, but maybe he'll join Friend Tech. But they dumped their apes on him. He was a liquidity provider. But as we close the doors on this Friend Tech combo, who you got for undervalued Friend Tech people?
I bought 4 main yesterday. He was trading
like main.
Yeah, main's cheap.
He was at normal.
Main's cheap.
And now he's
Handsome,
like,
what do you got?
I like, who do I like? I think Noah's really good. Noah of Markets. He's probably been the most like comprehensive posting research consistently, long stuff. I like DT, DCTR. He's like one of the smaller accounts. He's been pretty active. He's been doing well, like sharing fintech strategies. He has like 300 plus keys. Dude's like, his portfolio is crazy. who else? There's a good amount of people. Oh, Itzler. Itzler's pretty good. He's quiet on Twitter, but he's a really good trader. Has been active in Frentech. I think he's one of the biggest portfolios too.
It'd be nice if you could like preview people somehow, because like
it's
kind of taking a leap of faith a lot of times.
Right. I asked Pancakes and them about that too. I think that would be a good feature. Like, let me get like a blurb preview, or like a pop up. Yeah.
Get the front screen of what their combo is. Like, and that's it.
Yeah.
No scrolling ability, something like that. That'd be pretty solid. And you only get to do it like maybe twice per person or something. Who knows? But Osa, have you got any friend tech people? I mean, I don't even really have anyone to give myself. So
I don't know.
He's cheap. OSF himself is cheap.
OSF.
I'm cheap. I'm 0.42, but I want to stay there because it trades a lot. You know what I mean? I don't want to.
And you get
farm the fees, bro. Farm the fees.
Anson probably trades like once a day. You know?
Somebody in the chat says Matt Kalish. I think he did just join. Yeah, I saw that. And then Harabalos joined today too.
I bought the horse, Flow Horse. He's like 0.2. I was like, he's smart. I think he's smart.
Right.
He's smart.
Well, we're all bullish friend tech. I mean, we all agreed on something. That's the first time on the show. Well played, guys. Let's move on to the next thing. Anthem, let's get in a little bit of your background, how you started getting into crypto, where this all began. You know, where I don't know. We'll just start us at the beginning.
So I went to school in Atlanta, Georgia Tech. I studied computer science, and my minor was in business there. My first intro to crypto was in 2016. I had a class called Emerging Technologies, actually, and my professor was like a huge Bitcoin bull. So that was my first intro. Me and all my boys were like, what is this guy talking about? Like, what is Bitcoin? But that was like my first intro. And then in 2017, when I graduated, I was working as a software engineer. And I had a mentor who was super big on the crypto too. And he was like trading on Bittrex, like on BitMEX. He's like, bro, you got to get into this. You got to look at this. Just like tell me how much bread he was making trading. And he was also working as a software engineer. I was like, well, if it's easy to just do both of these things, I'll just do both. So that's when I started trading crypto. I was like 2017, made some money, lost some money on alts. 2018, traded some during the bear market. And just was working my regular job, but always kept up to date the crypto. And I was active on crypto Twitter. So that's where I learned from people like Kobe, TraderMain, like LoomDart. Because first cycle, I had no idea what I was doing. But after seeing them talk about, okay, this is how your portfolio should be, like divvy between alts and Bitcoin, Ethereum. This is how cycles work. This is how money flows between different places in crypto. Basically learned a ton from them. And then when next cycle came around, I was like, well, I've seen this before. I have a general idea of what's going to happen. And DeFi summer had just popped off. Like Aave did whatever 100x, whatever, let's comp, I think SNX, like a ton of those coins had done really well, and Bitcoin was still trading around like 9-10k. And I was like, well, if Bitcoin's trading at 9-10k, it's obviously gonna go back to all-time high if these alts have already popped off. And it was funny because all the chats I was in had no idea, didn't even care about Bitcoin. Because everybody that came in during DeFi summer was like, we're on Uniswap. We're like using Ethereum. We don't care about Bitcoin. I'm trying to tell them, like, there's no way Bitcoin doesn't at least rally back to all-time high, but nobody really cared. That was my first like trade of that cycle. I did well with that. And then it was just like, okay, well, I think Bitcoin's the local top. And when I was looking for altcoin plays, that's when I found Solana and some of the other DeFi stuff. Really just traded that 2020, 2021, went full-time crypto mid 2021. cause obviously cycle was crazy. And I was working, watching my daughter doing crypto. I was like, well, I can't do all these things at the same time. So I'm just going to go full-time doing crypto. And yeah, I've been pretty much full-time since then. I did a little bit of work at a VC for a few months. But yeah, I'm just trading on my own now. That's my general story.
Nice, man. So you started with the alts a little bit, then you moved to the mega cap with Bitcoin. And I mean, I think your strength from what everyone knows you for is definitely the alts and the smaller cap stuff. I think we had a ton of questions in the Rekt Radio comments about, you know, how you begin to think about these things. Like for me, when I look at them, you kind of have to be like willing to jump on a meme or willing to jump into liquid stuff and willing to like spot trends early, which assumes you're good at. how do you begin to, you know, train your mind to do these type of things and to find these type of spots?
Well, in 2020, a lot of it was just literally looking at every chart. So it's easier for me to process a ton of information quickly. It's something that I've always just been able to do really well. So I would go through all the TA, like all the charts. And then whenever we would have a major sell-off, I would look at what alts are rebounding the fastest and like which ones are leading. And that's typically a really high signal because that's like the strongest coin during the period of weakness in the market. So like when the market recovers, that's the coin you want to be long. And Solana was doing that literally all of 2021. Every single sell-off, it was leading. And people ignored it for a really long time, but it was one of the highest signals for me. And then also generally how I think about where money's going to flow to next. So you have something that goes 100x. Obviously, you're going to have people take profit on that. At some point, that's going to top. So where is that money going to flow to next in crypto? It's like thinking about different sectors. What haven't people been talking about? Where is the attention now? Where could it shift to? That's actually one of the ways I caught Prime recently, looking at that, is because I was like, everybody's saying NFTs are dead. Nobody's talking about GameFi. Everybody's honed in super hard on like Pepe, the GambleFi stuff, but nobody's talking about games. And then I checked the Parallel page and they're about to launch their whatever on Base, which is at the same time, like Base just launched an L2 and they were doing a launch their like initial packs on Base and they had their beta live. So I tweeted out, I was like, yo, what games are people talking about? Got a ton of replies on Twitter and people were like, yo, let me get you access to the Parallel, whatever, or beta. So just like keeping track of different sectors in crypto, where attention is not and where you think attention is going to shift to is big for me. But a ton of it was really TA last cycle. Like I was looking at which alts are strong when the market's not doing well. That's like generally how I think about it.
I quite like that the way you just described it, though, is like trying to look where nobody else is looking. I think when most people pick up on alts, even people who are relatively good, is because they, they're hearing about it from somebody else.
Somebody else.
The hope that they are getting kind of early to, I don't know, versus like maybe their friends or people even outside of crypto picking up on a trend. Like you can still be early. You can still be late in crypto, but early to a run on a crypto coin if you're at the right point in the cycle, right? Like if you hear stuff about something on crypto Twitter, you might get bailed out by, you know, tons of people coming into the space, particularly things like gaming. I like the way you just decided, like you're kind of trying to originate the concept yourself, and then I guess you have the platform to be able to do that as well. But looking where nobody else is looking is a good place to start, actually.
Yeah, the momentum in crypto is crazy too. Like I think in no other asset class can you really have how fast momentum shifts in crypto. Just because how easy it is to move your capital from like one chain to another chain or like one alt to another alt, you can do it in like seconds. So these trends can happen extremely, extremely fast. But that's why even when we don't have a ton of retail in crypto markets, you still have these coins that can do really well in isolated areas. Like Pepe went to whatever billion and a half market cap. Like Unibot did well, like whatever, Robit did well. Like you can have these isolated areas where if everybody's looking in this one place, even if the rest of the market is not doing that great, you can still make some money in crypto trading. So that's one of the things I like about crypto. It's like how easy it is to move your capital around and how that makes momentum work really well.
Yeah.
How do you think about exiting those sort of trades? Like these sort of things. And I know you were caught a lot of this on-chain stuff early, and now a lot of that stuff, well, not a lot of it, but some of it has been like destroyed, or at least that the narrative moved away, let's say, for the time being. Like did you think about the exit, or do you just you're in so early that you're just gonna run that for a long time?
I try to sell into the peaks. Like I've done a couple threads on like how to sell into parabolas. Typically you'll see like three drives on like super high volume. And then when the chart is literally going vertical and everybody is piling in, one thing that's a really good signal is when the volume of a coin is like 2x the actual market cap and it's higher than the volume of everything else that's trading. So it was a comparable for me. I was looking at when Pepe was running, I was looking at SHIB. I was like backtracking, looking at what SHIB did in 2021. And I was looking at how high the daily trading volume got. And at one point it was like higher than ETH or like close to ETH or whatever it was. And similarly, this happened this year. Pepe did like over a billion in volume in a couple of days leading up to Binance and then Binance listing. And it was like, okay, there's how much more volume can this do? Like it was a point where like everybody was just buying Pepe and everything else was down. So I partially TA and then looking at volume and price. The blow off tops, you just get better at spotting, I think, after trading for a while. Keyboard does the same thing, I'm pretty sure. But
yeah, no, those are pretty much the only indicators I look at too. Volume, price, and like, you know, you're just trying to see when the volume peaks like that for a blow off. And then you got things like the Binance listings and things like that, where, you know, like that's the news everyone's like anticipating. And once finally happens, a lot of sales and news events in these type of spots, since it's all just momentum based stuff.
Yeah.
Since there's no fundamentals behind it. I think another tough thing that maybe I definitely have trouble with alts is like managing your risk. Like how do you decide how much to put in a certain place? Are you just like doing it percentage based of a portfolio? Do you have different risk parameters for different trades? So it's a struggle I'm sure a lot of people, especially new people, come up with when, you know, how much of your portfolio goes into some of these things when you're trying to figure out be first in something that's pretty illiquid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think 70-30 is kind of how I've been saying it for people. I think it's generally a good rule to follow. So 70% of your portfolio is mostly the safe stuff, like stuff that you're staking, majors like Bitcoin, ETH. I include Solana in there. I'm kind of biased in that way, but Solana, Coinbase, stuff like that. That's like your 70% of your crypto portfolio. So that's what you're swing trading multiple months. You really want to try and sell that when you think the total high is in for crypto markets. Stuff is down like 70, 80%, 90%. It could go down another 50, whatever. But that's when you're trying to buy your spot positions in those coins, like Bitcoin, ETH, Coinbase stocks, Solana. So like stuff like that. You may have other coins that you think are fundamentally sound, but keep that in your like 70% of your portfolio and don't really touch that. And then the 30% is where you can just be a degenerate. So that's on-chain stuff, perps, like shorting stuff, like the aggressive yield farms. And then you can be more aggressive there because you know your 70% is more the safe stuff. So when I'm playing stuff like Pepe, like the early on-chain launches, that's that part of my portfolio. I don't really have super strict risk parameters for how much of my of that part of my portfolio I put into stuff. I'm honestly pretty aggressive. Like when I do have high conviction in trade, I usually just ship a good amount if I have pretty high conviction. Especially if I think rotation is moving from one coin I was in that's up a ton to something that I think could really pop off. Cause I know if something has already done a 10X, it's going to be really, really hard for that to 10X again if something else is about to pop. So that's generally how I think about it, like 70-30. But you never want to ship your entire port into on-chain shit. That's how you get
that'd be dangerous. As we're sitting here, obviously the Rec Radio curse, news just came out that FTX is allowed to liquidate their portfolio.
It's a lot of dumping.
Yeah, that was like, why the fuck did everything just dump?
I saw another headline that they're not allowed to tell you when now. Like, there's some sort of thing.
Probably not when. So this probably retraces realistically, but they just got more approval to liquidate the assets.
Okay.
So now, I mean, like, it's not like they're gonna market sell it. So. But I guess that people are gonna.
They should just market sell it and see what happens.
Just market sell it. It'd be a nice trade for us because you know a
little volume. Yeah, because then they have nothing left to sell. That'd be great.
At least get a scalp. So yeah, that sucks. Obviously, I'm long for the first time in fucking forever, and this happens. I'm like, why did everything just drop?
I love how ABM knows that like billions of assets are going to be sold and it's just in it for the scalp right at the bottom. Like, I'll be in it for the 5% from the bottom.
I just want 1% today and I would have got out. That's what kind of leverage I'm trading with, bro. My mind.
That's crazy.
1%. I'll be back. I'm back.
Honestly, it is a beauty to be in your group chat. To, like, feel.
Yeah, look at that. Keep touting it. I don't want to tout it and get arrested or something by regularly. So. But where were we before I interrupted with that? Sorry about that. We were talking about illiquidity and risk management for these
alts. 70-30, I think, is about right. Right, like that feels about right. Yeah. I mean, spot. And to be clear, I know you're, because obviously the way you post, you are very, very bullish. So like you're mainly in spot, and then you're not stables, and then on chain shit, right?
Yeah, I'm like fully deployed. I'm bullish. I'm super bullish. That's not faking. one thing I will say that's like something good that can happen is, or something you got to be wary of. So when you do hit super hard on a degen play, and then your 30% becomes way more than your 70%, you got to rebalance. And what a lot of people do, instead of rebalancing, they're just like, oh, this is my degen port. I'm just going to keep doing degen shit with my degen portfolio. And sometimes it works really well. That's how people literally hit like 1,000x in like short amount of time. But most of the time, it's better to rebalance into your safer positions after you hit really big. I think that's something that I wish I would have told myself like when I was early trading. So yeah.
That's responsible and disciplined. Speaking of that, are you diversifying outside of crypto, or are you just going all in crypto? Do you have any investments outside? Are you like,
not really yet.
Your main like safe portfolio is Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, dude, we're at the bottom. The safe portfolio is Bitcoin.
Fair enough. KBM's just so bearish on crypto. He can't even.
I'm not necessarily bearish. I mean, like, I like crypto. I'm just bearish on like the fucking volume and flows. It's like there's no one else is in there. It's just me learning.
Yeah, it's literally just us, bro. Like, yeah. Sorry
about it. What about Solana a bit? I know you're a big Solana guy. Like, you've obviously been there relatively early, I think, and then held it throughout the whole FTX stuff and everything. Like, what's your view here?
Generally, like long term or short term?
I guess short term, it's all this FTX stuff, so it's difficult to say. But do you think it's a better trade than the other majors that you were talking about?
I think it's a way better trade than especially the other L1s. So if you look at the L1s, like what's a good one? Stuff like, let me see, stuff like Polkadot. Like Polkadot, I think is a terrible, like just terrible trade in comparison to Solana. Because of how much more performance Solana is, like how much more developer activity they have, how much more mindshare they have in crypto. And also it's outperformed, I think, when I say DOT, by more than 3x or like 2x, whatever, this year. So I think if you want to be safe with this in the short term, if you're looking at like the FTX overhang in like short term, I think Solana versus some other L1s is a pretty good pair trade. But long term, there's not that many non-EVM chains out there right now that are focusing purely on this integrated architecture where everything is on the base layer and they're not using rollups. Solana is really the main bet that you can make that's been around for a while and gone through a ton of stuff, had upgrades to their technical architecture, been through the FTX, Alameda stuff, and still has a really strong community. It's a confluence of a ton of things that... And it's also down 50% from where it traded before FTX happened. Like, I think it's one of the biggest mispricings, in my opinion, in crypto. Like, it should be way, way, way more than just 5% of Ethereum's market cap. So, long-term, I'm super bullish on it. But I do think in the short term, they got to get over the hump. You've kind of seen sentiment shift a bit, I think, on Solana the past few months. People were, like, writing it off, but now people are kind of accepting of it.
For sure.
People like Visa writing, doing write-ups on it. I think Blockworks guys have done a good job doing research. Like Messari guys have done a pretty good job. So I think it's good that the crypto industry as a whole has kind of accepted that they got hit with a ton of shit that was out of their control. I think that's good in general, that we can be supportive of multiple different chains. But yeah, I think it's a good spot. It's like the best spot for me. I think Solana and Coinbase are my two highest conviction, like long-term plays for this bull.
Not to get too technical, but like you said, why is it important that everything's on like the L1, like no rollups? Why is that a positive, you think?
Well, for like composability. So if you have all these applications on Solana that are all composable with each other, and also for like in terms of finality, if you're doing any finance stuff, that's super important. So like any like DEXs, like any trading things, I think it's I think they're much better suited to be on one L1 instead of on rollups, where you have to worry about settlement to the base layer. Generally, I think that's why. But also, it's just there's no competition really in that area. Like, everybody else has kind of accepted that we're going to need rollups to scale. Solana hasn't really reached that point where the SVM has hit capacity in what they can do yet. So they also have things like Firedance are coming out, which is supposed to make their even more performant than it is now. Yeah, it's just like the competition area is not very strong there.
Yeah, one would think once the FTX overhang is gone, that it would allow it to have less of an uncapped upside. Like, it feels like it's capped right now. People are worried about them selling constantly, but
yeah. What do you think of the big applications coming? Like, what is it gaming? I know gaming was big, but is there anything else you think? I guess Visa, but I mean, what are people doing on Solana right now? I know you might say that about crypto in general.
I was stepping for a bit.
Yes, that's definitely a walking thing. Yeah. What are some things that are like uniquely enabled by Solana? So since it's so much cheaper to like do things on chain, one of the really cool things that Solana has is NFT compression. So to mint NFTs on Solana, it's like 1,000x cheaper than it is to do so on Ethereum. And that enables applications like, I don't know if you guys know Drip House, but Drip House is one of the more popular NFT apps on Solana. And they have been able to onboard, like, I want to say 300K new users that from, like, they're, like, basically know Solana in their wallets prior to. And after using Drip House, they've also used other applications. So what Drip House is it allows artists to airdrop art to whoever subscribes to them in the Drip House app every week. So if you have an account on Drip House, you subscribe to whatever artist you want. And every week you'll get some art from them. So it's kind of similar to Art Blocks, but without the upfront cost that you need to pay to mint. And the reason they can do it so cheaply is because of how NFT compression works on Solana. So I want to say they've minted like 6 million NFTs and they've only spent like $300 or something crazy like that. So there's like, if you're looking at consumer focused applications, I think the best place to deploy them is Solana by far, just because of how they can do things at scale. What other good ones? I think a lot of the perps exchanges, like the decentralized perps, are going to be interesting. Stuff like Drift, and others. It's just like, one of the issues with GMX is the fees are so inhibitive to users, especially when activity is high. And the speed is not all that great. So on Solana, you don't really have those issues because it's faster and it's cheaper. It's just the problem is there's no liquidity there yet. So that's like their really blocker for them, is getting people to accept that Solana is actually valid as an L1 and get people to put liquidity there. those are two things.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, when this overhang changes, it does, I think, come back to it. I think people just got burnt on even like the DeFi stuff and they'll feel a bit more comfortable when that's good. There was a good interview, I think it was on Bankless, where someone was interviewed about like the future of Solana and even Cosmos as well. And it's true, like in crypto, we kind of just, everyone's kind of rallied now behind ETH as the utility, but having different non-EVM L1s, I think, pushes the space way forward. Like, you use the example of, like, I'm an American, I want America to succeed, but at the same time, like, I recognize that the world is better with, like, various different other countries all trying to succeed. Like, you will get to a better end state of, like, technical development by not just assuming that your own way of thinking is the best way of doing it.
It's good for competition. Like, you need healthy competition, I think, in any asset class for it to move forward. Because if there was nobody competing with the EVM, we would never have anything more than just the EVM. It would just be that. Yeah.
What about Telegram bots? Pivoting right here again real quick because, you know, we're running out of time. But Telegram bots, do you use those for executions all the time now? Or what's your thoughts on those? I know we had Banana Gun just flopping. Banana.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I've used Unibot. I've never used Banana. I'm not great at sniping the early launches. Like, the dudes who play the 500K and under stuff, that's not really me. I typically find things in the, like, try 5 mil area. But yeah, using Unibot on mobile is way better than using Uniswap. Like I've tried to buy things on Uniswap, the app, mm-hmm. and like it all through MetaMask, and like I get so many failures and shit, and Unibot just handles all that for you, which I think is a pretty big UX step. But there's also a ton of competition in that area now where people are like, oh, Unibot went from basically zero to 200 mil. There's a lane here for users to abstract away that crypto piece. They just want an application that's very user-friendly. They don't have to worry about shit failing. Mm-hmm. I want to buy stuff in one click. So now there's a ton of teams building competition in that area. Like Grug, I don't know if you guys know Grug, but he's building out Rampage, which is supposed to be like a competitor to Unibot. It's going to be like a web app that people can use for trading. Also analytics stuff like MEV protection. And they want to do a lot of automated trading, not just based on, okay, when price hits this, I want to sell, but also stuff on social. So like if somebody tweets about this coin, or if there's a volume spike on this coin, I want to buy whatever that is associated with that, like whatever alt. So I think that's going to be one of the really cool launches. It's not even in beta yet, but they're actually doing beta through Frentech. They're like giving their beta through their Frentech
keyboards. Drug or poker bot, you get access, right? That's why
their
prices are so high.
Yeah.
I bought poker bot today, actually. So there you go.
It's a good buy.
Yeah, no,
I have Grug.
Nice. We're going to be riding to the promise line together, it sounds like.
Exactly. Hope so, bro. Yeah, they said they're going to have a token, so hey.
Oh, there you go. Promising things for the friend tech. Love to see it. Yeah. But I guess we're not done yet, but pretty close. Let's get to your biggest losses in the spirit of Wrecked Radio. We love to hear about how our guests got wrecked and then how they came back from it. You know, we're all about getting wrecked, but you got to bounce back. That's how you made it.
Yeah.
You really have.
I think my biggest loss on an individual trade was shorting Luna. I was shorting Luna way too early. I was shorting it early, bro. Like, so when I was convinced the market had topped in like late 21, I was like, bro, Bitcoin's top, Ethereum's top, everything is top. Nobody's talking about selling. I asked people, like, how much money have you withdrawn to your bank account? And they're like 5%. How much money even stables are like zero. I'm like, bro, so I thought everything was topped. And then Luna had, I don't know if you know the chart, but like had the breakout, it came back down and then it rallied back into its previous highs. And I was like, oh, this is free. It's free short. I like slammed it, went to sleep. I woke up the next day.
Jesus Christ.
Overnight. Yeah, I was cocky. I literally sold the top and what I thought was everything. I'm literally all in stables, like just chilling. I'm like, dude, stables. And I shorted Luna. I woke up the next day and it was up like 30%. And I was like, yo, fuck. So I closed out, thankfully. I didn't get like fully licked, but that was like my biggest hit. I think I've taken on one trade. And then what other big loss? I think the other big loss I took was in January of 2022. I had like some on-chain positions and I just like left my wallet and didn't have access to it and went to like I went on vacation for like a couple of days and just had my stuff sitting. And like that was when market crashed. I think it was like late January, like 22. So that was like my two biggest losses, I think.
How'd you bounce back mentally?
mentally.
maybe it didn't affect your mental state.
I still think about that. I was like, dude, that's so dumb.
Oh, or maybe you haven't gotten back yet.
But yeah, I mean, I made good money this year. Like survived the rest of 2022. But I think like the way you bounce back from any of those losses is just like, you know, there's always another opportunity because people can get zeroed in crypto and come back because there's always another op that's going to come around the corner. So just like staying committed and staying like locked in, that's like the biggest thing for me is like, you always got to be paying attention to like what new is going on. That's why I always try and tell people always to test out all the new things, even if you think it may be dumb, that payoff that you could get by being early, even if you don't really have a strong thesis on it yet, can be super high, especially when you can make a cheap bet with not a large position of your like portfolio. It's like I try and play those asymmetric bets a ton.
So how do you find out about the new stuff?
Apart from your food. I'm online. I'm online 24/7, bro. I'm always online, like always on Twitter, like Telegram, like all those chats. I have a ton of lists that I've organized for like different ecosystems that I look at. Just like scroll through those. But yeah, I feel like I just consume a ton of online content. I don't really have a good way for saying, honestly, for saying how. I just feel like I'm pretty plugged in. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing. Just like staring at charts, being online, just always interacting with people, everything like that is the best advice you can have in crypto. Just being sticking your hand out and trying to grab things. But yeah, we got to finish it up 5 minutes early. So we're going to do the closing questions and then the spins right now. OSF, do you want to get into the last closing question and then also give away the code for Ansem?
Yeah, last question that we ask all our guests is, how do you avoid getting wrecked?
Risk management. So like whenever you're like whatever position you're in, make sure you cap your risk before you take the trade. The hardest thing to do when you're in a losing position is to figure out how to get out of it if you didn't have preset parameters beforehand. Because like that's when your like mental is already fucked up. When you're taking the trade, your mental is clear. But when you're in a losing position, if you don't have like strict ways to get out of it, that's how you get fucked up. So I would say, I think journaling is good. Like if before you take a position, write down like, oh, I'm going to get out here, or like know in your head, I'm going to get out here. Journaling and like having strict risk parameters, I would say, is the best way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think 99% of times people get messed up because they don't have a plan. So have a plan.
Yeah.
A little echo on you yourself somehow.
But... Yeah, I'm kind of like half set up today, but I'll be back in full action in a couple of weeks.